Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, welcome to the Balance Podcast. Our guest today, Esme Creed-Miles, the star of Hannah, a very popular show on Amazon. The second series dropped. I've got to stop saying dropped. I'm 42 now. Dropped recently. Esme, what a talent. As you'll discover in this chat, though, somewhat admirably, Esme has already branched out into directing, and it would appear that that is where Esme sees her future. You know, she's clearly a very talented actor, and it's to her credit that she wants to blossom and grow. Hannah is a very fine show. If you are looking for that new box set, it's action-packed. There are twists, there are turns. It's a heck of a cast. Call me old-fashioned. I love me some great stunt work. There's some great stunts in it as well. It always looks beautiful as well. It looks great. And we sort of dive into that, really. The better TV shows are looking and the impact that that can have. And it was great to chat. I must admit, the next day I thought, if either of my girls end up like Esme, then I will have done a good job. Great discussion. I learned a great deal. I always like to... regular listeners will know that I'm no stranger to thinking I have an opinion, listening to someone else, and then me going, yeah, okay, I like what you just said. And that certainly happens here. Esme was wonderful, and blimey O'Reilly, I would happily, I'm not saying that we would do this, but I would happily do a weekly part. I mean, it's ridiculous. I may as well say I'd like to grow a fringe. But while she was talking, I thought, God, I could do a podcast with her every week. Anyway, huge thanks to Esme. Hannah is an absolute banger and is available to watch on Amazon. I actually prefer it to the movie. Is that sacrilege? I do. The movie is a very fine movie. I always remember the tagline, adapt or die. I've gone full Partridge. This is just an absolute meander. But if you like the movie, I would say this certainly does its own thing. It's a belter. So huge thanks to Esme. And here she is, Esme Creed-Miles. How are you? You all right?
Good, thanks. Yeah, how are you?
Yes, not too bad. Not too bad. Are you? Will you be sorry to see lockdown go?
Yeah. Well, it's kind of going already, isn't it? I don't know. I was out and about last night. I went for dinner, and I just felt very weird. I felt like this was all wrong, and everyone just needs to go back inside for a bit longer.
I totally agree. Did you manage to go to a restaurant?
I did. Yeah. I mean, it was like, I hadn't seen some people in a while, and the restaurant was very big, so everything was distanced, and, you know, the waiters and stuff were wearing masks. But I found myself, like, you know, I went for a pepper, and I went to, you know, put some pepper on my pasta, and then I was, like, holding the pepper grinder. I was like, I've held this pepper grinder before. I never had that feeling ever. And then I was Purelling my hands, like, after touching the pepper grinder, and it was very weird. But then I just felt like, well, I mean, I live in London, and I'm out and about a lot, you know, I have to go out and do things. So if, you know, if I'm going to get it, I'm going to get it, and I'm young. But I just felt like, you know, I haven't seen my grandparents in months and months, and I don't know when I will be able to. And it just sucks. Anyway, it's very sad.
Oh, I'm sorry. So have you not been able to see the grandparents as yet then? Is that still, you're still waiting?
No, I mean, yeah, my granddad, he only lives a, like, you know, 20-minute drive away, but he's not, you know, he's not. He said very funnily, he was like, no one has crossed my threshold since March or something. He was like, I was like, okay. Also, it's awful, but yeah. And I just wish we could all just stay indoors a little bit longer until we know what's going on a bit better. But yeah, that's what I think.
I agree completely. Have you had any I will hold my hands up. I'm well aware this is a tone deaf thing to say, and I apologize profusely, but I will confess to, you know, what's happened globally, but I will confess being able to press pause on life, which is something that wouldn't have been possible otherwise. I have found positives. So spending more time with the kids, that I, you know, something that I've not done before due to working all the time. I just wondered if you'd found positives in what happened.
I don't know. Yes, I think so. There maybe are. I mean, I've spent a lot of quality time with people in my life that I do love. And I think I wouldn't have, you know, I wouldn't have got to a place that I have done with some of those people had it not been for this sort of situation. But I mean, like creatively, I haven't found it to be useful. I found it incredibly draining. The anxiety, I think is quite prohibitive, and I don't feel like I'm using my hours to read or do things that are necessarily productive. If anything, I sort of feel the need to dissociate most of the time with kind of really bad telly. So
that is true, because obviously, you know, in that dream world, we'd wake up and we'd go for that run and we'd write that script and all of that. But the reality is, you're right, the anxiety and the uncertainty, it doesn't necessarily make for the best creative environment, I guess, does it?
Not at all. Yeah, no. I have every day. This is one of my issues. I have like fantasy days. You know, I wake up and I have this like a schedule in my head, when actually I get up at about 10:30.
Yeah.
And then I don't finish out, and I have breakfast at like midday. And then it's dark, and then I'm like, what am I doing? And then I just like, well, it's pretty late now, I may as well watch some reality TV. And then I'm tired, and then I'm like, well, I may as well go to bed. So, that's what the days look like.
Now, as someone who's watched some bad telly this lockdown, what bad telly are we talking?
Well, literally, I've discovered Real Housewives for the first time in my life.
If I could swap my wife to field the Real Housewives stuff, because I think you and her probably have similar viewing habits.
I mean, literally, I consider myself, I'm very pretentious, and I think I'm above that stuff. But actually, it is entertainment at its like finest. It really is. Like it has everything. It has, you know, you follow the family elements, the kids growing up and leaving home, and the marital problems, and then the friendship issues and the fights. I mean, it's just like a paradigm for life. Everything happens in life happens on that show in a far more privileged setting. And it's very entertaining. Yeah.
I would always maintain that like a classic series of Celebrity Big Brother would have all the things that you've talked about there, and then it would have this payoff. And there was something almost, I mean, I'm giving it too much credit, but shows like that, there is something almost Shakespearean with the rise and the fall and the the things that they go through. It's I think some of those shows transcend maybe what they'd initially set out to achieve, I guess, because it's life, isn't it? It's human drama.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. There's the one English woman among the wives was my favorite in the first. I started from the beginning, which starts, I think it's like 2010, and I only started watching it like a few weeks ago. I'm already on season 5 now, which is great.
Yeah.
But I really love this one, Lisa Vanderpump. Like, she was my favorite because she's English.
Yeah.
And I was like, go and represent, you know, like, and she was so classy, and she didn't get too involved in the drama. And then all of a sudden, like, this dark side started to appear as the longer she was on the show. And then she went from like literally being the queen to everyone turned on her. And then it was this bigger, yeah, it was really Shakespearean. She fell from her throne. Wow. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, I would say bad telly is wonderful. You know, it's one thing for escapism, but now you are associated not just with good telly, but with great telly, some of the very best telly. This is a real, you know, this is a real golden age of TV, and you were at the absolute vanguard of this. How wonderful is it to be associated with such a show that's beloved by critics, but also with audiences? I mean, it's dreamland, isn't it?
You know, it's really weird because I'm super grateful for the opportunity to be involved. Like, I'm not naive to like how incredible that opportunity is, and how, you know, how what a great gig it is, essentially. But my life hasn't changed very much apart from the fact that I'm now in a better position to support myself. My life hasn't really changed, and I just kind of work a lot more and I have a lot more pressure. So I think there's an assumption that, like, you know, if you're involved in something like this, everything's roses. And actually, the industry is still very, very competitive. And especially for someone like me, you know, I want to be a filmmaker. I've just like directed a film last year, and that's what I really want to do. And so, like, actually with TV being such a gargantuan beast, it really does take up a lot of space for independent voices. And so, you know, the oversaturation in you know, with streaming platforms, I think it's really hard to navigate that as a viewer and also as an artist, because it's confusing as to who is holding the reins, you know, like people who have a financial interest in the art and people who have an artistic interest in the art. So, like, I think the show is good because obviously, like, David came from a theatre background, and, you know, they do get really interesting directors like Eva, who directed the first two episodes. I mean, she's amazing. Her second film went to Cannes, Girls of the Sun. And it's so, I mean, to get to work with her on something like this was like just a dream come true, to work with someone like that. So I think for me, those are the things that I really love about it, you know, meeting people like that. But I do worry for the industry in terms of the expansion of television a lot.
I guess the power is in the, I mean, and please, you know, by all means, tell me I'm wrong, because my I'm one of those people, I think I've got an opinion, someone will say something, I'll go, oh yeah, actually, I agree with what you just said. But with a show like Hannah, it does feel like the power is in the hand of the person at home. What I mean by that is, because there is so much telly, if a show isn't brilliant, the person at home is pressing something else. Whereas with a show like Hannah, I mean, everything about it is such a high level. I mean, I guess that's a good thing, though, isn't it? You know, in terms of creatively.
Yeah, I mean, I get. What are you saying that, like? Are you saying that, like, because of the cornucopia of choice, like, it indicates that it's good if people watch it?
Well, I just think that a show now has to be so good, and Hannah, you know, something that Hannah is, and therefore, if the overall quality of TV has to get better in order to hold people's interests, then I feel that can be a good thing. Because if a show's not great, then people in this day and age just won't watch it.
Well, I'm going to have to politely disagree with you, because that industry now is more concerned with quantity rather than quality. And I think that, you know, the general attention span of people, the overwhelm of choice and the, like, across the board degradation of quality that I personally witness in mainstream film and TV means that people's bars are a lot lower. And I think that people are impressionable. And I think that I see a lot of things, even in, like, the Academy, that are getting attention, that you know, that do well at awards. And I don't understand it. I don't see, and this is not me speaking about Hannah, because, you know, I'm maybe biased being a part of it, but I do think it is almost, you know, it has that kind of indie film quality, and I do think it's really fantastic.
Yeah.
But, and I think Amazon, actually, in terms of the streaming services, is better at that, you know, and they do support a lot of good independent film, but, you know, there's a lot of out there, and there's a lot of crap out there that people love. So that's just my opinion.
So is your concern that some really interesting voices are not being heard then, because the heavyweights are too powerful?
Yeah, I mean, there's a really interesting, I was watching this Scorsese interview the other day, and he's talking about the value of image has decreased because of oversaturation. So if you are being bombarded all day with your phone, your computer, your Netflix, with image after image after image, the importance and sentiment of whatever whatever is being represented is devalued instantly. And he was, you know, and he didn't make this comparison, but for me, it's like walking into an American supermarket, there is, you're overwhelmed by choice, and I just get overwhelmed and I want to leave. And that overwhelm creates an anxiety that makes me disengage with film in general. And it makes it a lot harder to, even though there's a wealth of information out there, there's so much of it that it actually, for me, makes it harder to find what I'm interested in. Because, you know, like, for example, if you want to, like, the indie film circuits or film festival circuits, if those films and the space in which people might watch them are being taken up by, like, streaming giants, it means that their audience is limited, which means that their possible financing is limited, which means that they may not get to continue making those movies. And that's scary to me. Sorry, I'm really rambling.
No. Just to be candid with you, the next time I get into a discussion, I will be repeating word for word what you just said there. Yeah, I mean, someone had shared a list of, I think it was like the top 10 movies in the US box office from, it was like 1987. So it was like this time in 1987. And they were making the point, like, every single film was like a classic. And they were making the point that if comparing it to, say, 2020, you know, where it tends to be the fourth film of a franchise, the third spin-off, another reboot. And I guess that sort of thing is the sort of point that you're making there?
100%. And also, you have to remember, like, we live, our society, like, okay, I'm getting,
no, this
know,
is, this
people
is,
might get really pissed off with me saying this, and I don't want to, you know, and, but the industry now, you have the people who are pulling the strings, businessmen, right? You know, the people who get to make those choices are the people who have the money. Now, that's not necessarily a problem. Industry needs money to operate. But when that becomes pretty much the solitary qualifying factor to be in that position, that sort of, I mean, it negates being there because you have actual cultural merit. And I think that, like, a lot of people who are making those decisions don't. And, you know, if their interest is to make X amount of money at the box office and not because they are generally emotionally invested in the stories they're telling, then that just ruins it. And that is the case, I think, across the board. And I think it's the problem with streaming services. I think it's the problem with TV. I think it's a problem with huge movie franchises. And they are taking money, time, space away from voices that need to be heard.
What is the, what do you think the answer might be? Is there a positive way out to this?
I have absolutely no idea, but I know nothing about, I'm going to say this word wrong, because I always want to say, this is really stupid. I always want to say ecology, and it's not, it's economics. I don't know why my brain does that, but I know nothing about, like, economy, but I think that's what it's all about. It's all about capitalism. I'm sounding super, super lame right now.
No, that's
what it's about. And then there's
wonderful.
And that's the structure. And so, like, there's not really much, like, you know, it's like watching, have you seen that documentary Hypernormalization?
No.
You know, is it, what's his name? Is it Andrew or Adam Curtis?
Oh, Adam Curtis.
It's like watching that shit, you know, like we're fucked and like, I'm super cynical as well. So I don't have, you know, and also at this point, I mean, the planet is literally going to die in like 20 years. So I mean, this kind of feels not important anyway, but in my industry. Yeah. I think
in terms of, I totally get what you're saying. And I think I've probably been naive I certainly don't mean this with movies, because I'm with you. My heart breaks with, you know, the state of cinema at times in terms of what does well and what doesn't do well. I think I was perhaps naively thinking that TV has to be as good as, say, Hannah or Ozark or, you know, and so on in order to survive. But you're quite right. There are plenty of shows that don't hit that watermark that do still get watched, don't they?
And also, there's a load of shows that just get made anyway, regardless. Like, it doesn't matter. I mean, there's like shows. I mean, you're on Netflix. There are so many shows.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember the one that Joel Kinnaman was in before he did Hannah, Altered Carbon. You know, if you look up the budget for that, I mean, it was up there, you know, it was like there for like, do you know, 20 seconds. It was up there. It's like, watch this show. That was it. You know?
So is it almost like a form of fishing in the you know, they'll make this show, they'll bang it out. But as you say, they spend a lot of money. If the people go for it, great, we'll make another 10 episodes. If they don't, oh well, and they just move on to the next thing.
Have so much money, they can afford to take those risks. And in my mind, I'm like, well, what if you prioritize really, really good stuff, spent the money on that, and use that other money to lift up voices that haven't been heard or that need to be? And I just don't think...
What would your all-time favourites be then?
Favourite movies?
Yeah.
All-time favourite movies, King of Comedy.
Incredible.
I love Beau Travail. It's probably one of my favourite movies. It's a Claire Denis film. You know, Denis Levant at the end, he does that crazy dance. What other movies do I love? I mean, I love the Safdie brothers. They're getting a bit more commercial now, which I think they deserve. But I thought that, you know, Good Time and Daddy Long Legs and were great films. You Were Never Really Here, I thought was just incredible.
Oh, my gosh. What a piece of work that is.
I'm trying to think. I get so overwhelmed. I think that, like, you know, Gina Rowland's all the stuff that she used to do is really inspiring to me, like A Woman Under the Influence and John Cassavetes, all of his movies. And I also love old Woody Allen. I'm just going to say it. I do. I love his old stuff. Really, really, really love it. Very important to me.
I mean, when Hannah, and given, you know, what you did with Jamie, are you like a sponge there? You know, because I just think, cinematically, I think the way it's shot, the way it looks, the performances, it's a really beautiful, the cinematography is fantastic, but it's really well directed as well. Is it a case, are you just hoovering up as much information as you can there for yourself as a filmmaker?
Yes. I found that, like, when I was directing Jamie, I had this, I don't think people understand, when you're working on TV, the pressure, the time frame, it's like, you know, it's like, it feels like how when runners train, you know, at high altitude with bags of rocks before they go and do their normal running, you know? So, like, if you push yourself that intensely, when you come out of that environment and you're in an environment where you have more time, you're much more capable. I mean, I was just so on schedule when we were shooting my short, I really, they were like, oh, you can go again. And I was like, no, I've got it. Like because when you're working on TV, you don't have that much time. And I think that's what was really useful to me. And also when you working like on both sides of the camera, actually Eva said something really interesting to me. And I don't know if she meant it with regard to me or not. I don't know if she knew that I directed, but she said she loves working with actors who direct because they understand her, you know, they understand her needs. And I love that mutual relationship, like working with directors who sometimes act a bit and working with, you know, and vice versa. And that's a really nice relationship.
And so I suppose the beautiful thing there is, given you are a director, when the director is saying, you know, we want to do it like this, I guess you have more empathy, you know, rather than back in the day where the big Hollywood star, the director would go, I mean, Kevin Smith tells his story about Bruce Willis, actually, doesn't he? We need a second take. And the star just goes, nope. They get this shot. And what they need Bruce to get out of the car and fire his gun. And the first take is not a good take. I think he's blinking and, you know, and Kevin Smith.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promoting for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
He seems like a reasonable dude. Was like, yeah, we need to do that again. And he says when you watch this particular film, that the one that they end up going with is the only take that Bruce would do. Whereas I guess by seeing it from both sides of the camera, that's going to make you a pleasure to work with.
I don't know about that, but but yeah, let's hope so.
Can you share with us? I know you're not asking you to spoil details or anything, but what's the plan there as a filmmaker? Is that where you see? Would you see yourself moving away from acting over time? Would you be a full time director?
I think that would be the dream. That would be the ultimate dream.
Yeah.
I never really wanted to be an actress. That was never my goal. And then I just ended up doing it by accident. And then that being said, like, you know, if I get a script come through or an audition come through to work with like an amazing director or production company, I get so excited. And there is a magic to like when you have that moment in front of camera, or, you know, you have that affinity with. And I remember the first time I saw Dark River, like I was only a tiny part in that film, but coming out and just this sense of pride of being a part of that film was something I'd never felt before. And it was really, like, really special. So I don't know if I necessarily want to lose those moments, but I definitely, my joy comes from combining my love of like aesthetic and storytelling. And I think you can do that as an actor, but I think that, like, you know, my brief experience of doing it as a director was super just fulfilling in a way that I'd never experienced as an actor. So I think that, like, I just want to keep finding that in my life. But, you know, that doesn't exclude being a part of wonderful projects as an actor as well. I'd be lucky to do those things.
How did the Hannah gig come about? Was it literally you were put up for the audition?
Well, I had an agent, and I'd said to her, I was at university and I was halfway through my course, and I'd said to her that I wasn't gonna work or do any auditioning. I was at uni, and like I'd done a few movies when I was like 16.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, I'm not gonna do this anymore. And then I was at university and I was really depressed and I was really bored. I was at art school and I didn't want to go to art school. I wanted to go and study English, but I didn't have any A-levels because I dropped out of school. So I was like, okay. And I was bored. Yeah. And I just called her up and I was like, is there anything interesting about right now? And she said, oh, actually, there's this Hannah thing that you could be good for. And I was like, okay, I'll do a tape. And I never thought I'd get it, you know, something like that. And so I also didn't think, well, it's great because I'll probably end up just continuing with my course, which would probably be good for me anyway. It won't harm to just send a tape in. And then I got it.
I mean, that's nice how that turned out then, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's pretty sweet, actually. You know, and then I wouldn't have directed without it. and I wouldn't have met all the amazing people I have on that journey. So yeah, it's amazing.
Now, given the twists along the way with a show like that, is it one of those shows where you're not allowed to see the scripts? You know, do you see it like a day at a time, or is it not as closely guarded as that?
No, it's not as closely guarded as that. And, you know, David will share with me scripts, you know, a few months leading to the shoot and stuff of maybe the first couple of episodes, which is much better. You know, it's better to have context what you're doing and time to prepare. I can't imagine being on one of those jobs where you get, you know, it's day by day. That would just be bizarre to me.
And this, you know, some of the big franchise movies, I think it gets printed on like shiny paper so that you can't photocopy it and all that.
Yeah, it's so ridiculous. Like, nobody gives a fuck. Like, chill out.
This is exactly it. I once went to a set visit for it was a lower budget film, and they were telling me the stories because, you know, let's just say a well-known film franchise, whichever franchise you think it was, is exactly that. And they were telling me the extent that they'd gone to protect their set, and they were just like, we don't care, no one cares, you know.
No one cares.
May I ask, obviously some of the action in this show is, you know, I mean that's one of the great things about TV, is that, again, some of the shots in this show, a lot of movies, I guess a lot of the action films are certainly having to raise their game because a show like Hannah is so good. Is the training, is it punishing, or is it something that you enjoy?
I didn't train that much season two, actually. I trained a lot season one, and it killed me. And I didn't have enough time to prepare, really, and I'd never done any sport. But then after the season ended, you know, because you shoot a 13-hour day, and then you have to go to the gym and work out, and then you have to do stunt rehearsals on your days off. So you just die, and you're doing that for 6 to 8 months. I mean, it's just like unbearable, which is another reason why when people are like, how amazing is it to be part of TV? I'm like, dude, you have no idea how much hard work this is. Like, seriously. And that's not just me. That's everyone. I mean, you know, because when I finish, we long days on TV. And so I might rap and then go and do training. But then, well, on season one, I didn't on season two. But then everyone else has to get rid of the set, pack up, get home, de-rig the whole crew. So everyone's like doing really fucking long days, 5 days a week for a long time, and that's just the movie business. It's tough. And so the second season, I was like, I need to preserve my energy for when I'm having to have like mental breakdowns all the time on camera. I can't be doing both emotionally and physically, so I just didn't train as much, but the stunt people were really great with that, because then they sort of shouldered the burden a lot more of the time with me. And then they would step in. And so I was only doing stuff when I absolutely had to do it, you know, like when my face was absolutely required.
Yeah.
And then other than that, it really, because in the first season I did all of the choreography. And the second, you know, so when my back is turned, it's not me, basically.
I understand. So can you, now this is something that a lot of, I mean, I reckon probably 99% of people don't realise. You know, I think there is an assumption that, you know, you get up, you know, glamorous trailer, you appear on set, you film for a couple
of
months. But obviously the reality is remarkable. I chatted with someone from Outlander, and they were, you know, they're explaining what a typical day was like, and my jaw was like hitting the floor.
Yeah.
So what sort of time are you getting up, and then what time, this was like, I guess more for series one with the training, when are you filming until, and then when are you training until, and then what were you doing to stay sane?
So, I mean, I wasn't sane.
Yeah.
But I would get up on a good day when I didn't have an hour or 2 hour drive into work, which is often the case because you're on location. Like this season, I was living in Soho and I was working in like a 2 hour drive from London. So I was having to get up at 5 o'clock every morning, and then I get home maybe 9. So on season one, for example, I had an amazing trainer, Sylvie, who was with me basically the whole time. And I'd get up 6, maybe, get in the car in my pajamas, drive to work. Then I'd have maybe an hour, maybe a bit longer, an hour and a half, hair and makeup. So I have a wig that needs to put on. Wigs take ages to put on. And then, you know, if I have any SFX, did any like blood or scars, that takes a while. Covering up tattoos, that takes a while. Then you have costume. Then maybe I get to shove a bit of breakfast in. Hopefully I have a time to take a shit. Probably not. That's the worst part, because you never know when you can poo. Like, seriously, you're all day. There's no, like, where are the porta potties? Somewhere in the forest. Where are you going to, seriously? Like, you get a 5-minute coffee break, everyone. Oh, can I go to the loo? Yeah, maybe. But then you've got an AD knocking on the porta potty. Like, heart, it sucks. So then, you know, providing you've gone to the toilet, that was so gross. Providing you've gone to the toilet, then you take him to set, then you do a run through, then you're maybe on set from like 8 till or 9 till 5 or 6. Maybe less, longer than that. I don't fucking know. And then D-rig, we had to get your wig taken off, your makeup taken off. That takes an hour. Then I go to the gym and train. Then I go to bed, or I'm probably have insomnia.
I was going to say, because you still must be, you must still be wired from the day, I'm guessing, especially by...
Yeah, totally wired. Yeah.
I'll confess, I listen to this thing. I mean, my wife next to me is every night's like, what are you doing? But I have to listen to this ASMR thing to try and get myself to sleep, because I suffer with the whole... too wired thing. Was there anything you were doing to help you power down?
I don't know. No, not really, but I should probably find something. I'm now meditating. I'm one of those assholes.
No, not at all. How do you find it?
It's really hard. I have ADHD, so like that's pretty tough, but I do like maybe 10 or 15 minutes. I try and do it every day. And I do feel kind of good when I do it. I do feel like, you know, I do sort of go into this Zen mode. It's really nice. Yeah.
Are you at that? The reason why I'm smirking is because I'll tell you where I'm at. I've tried for so many years, but I'm still at the guided stage. So I still need the, you know.
Oh yeah. No, me too, dude.
Oh, thank God. I mean,
I'm not just like sitting on my own with my eyes closed. No.
I mean, I'm not saying I'm jealous of those guys, but I certainly, it's more that I don't know how they do it. I can't ever imagine not having the, you know, you were a strong, confident, but you know, I can't ever imagine being without the guided, you know.
There's a really good app actually that I use, and this isn't like a plugin or whatever. I'm not famous enough for that, but it's called Headspace.
Sure.
And I think it's really great. Like, it has all these different, like, for stress, for anxiety, like, for all the different things. And you just click in, you can choose 5, from up to 5 to 20 minutes. And they really work for me. And they're not cringy either.
No, they're good.
There's no, like, flute music or sort of Imagine an Ocean bullshit. Like, it's really good.
What have you managed to keep fit on lockdown? What were you doing? What were you doing for that?
Well, for about like 3 months, I did nothing. No, I felt like a potato. And then I started doing a bit more yoga, going for runs with my dog, things like that.
So yoga on lockdown. I can't recommend it enough. I mean, I've done yoga for about 10 years. I'm not very good at it. I'll never, but I get a lot out of it. I mean, it's, for anyone who's not tried it, it is a wonderful thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it takes a while. And I would really recommend, actually, when I started, I would recommend, this is kind of a boring thing to say, but paying, if you can, for like 1 or 2 one-on-one sessions. Because I did that. I'm lucky enough to be able to do that.
Yeah.
But I remember I used to go to yoga classes before, and then after it changed dramatically. And I remember going to classes before lockdown and seeing people in positions that were so wrong, and they were fucking their bodies up. And the teacher doesn't say shit because she's got like, what, 30, 35 people maybe in the room. So I really recommend when people start doing that stuff that they just invest in themselves for like 1 hour just to know really what they're doing before they go in.
That's a good idea. With Hannah, because you look so different, and I'm sure you've heard this before, but because you're able to – transform yourself like that? Are you? Do I take it you're okay living a normal life without people, you know, bothering you, if you like?
Yeah, I never get, very rarely get recognised. And I thought that was just because no one liked the show. And then I keep having situations where I'll tell people what I do and they'll be, oh, really? And what part do you play in that? Seriously, it happens all the time. Oh, wow. And I was actually at dinner the other night with, I won't say who I was with, but someone's like, oh, and have you seen the show Hannah? And the guy went, and we'd been having dinner for like 20 minutes and he went, yeah, and he was about to sort of snag it off. And then my friend's interjection went, oh, she's Hannah. And then it's so funny. And he went, oh, and we've been having dinner for like, you know, like half an hour. He was really nice about it, actually. He was like, no, it's just not my thing. And he had some totally valid points. Well, he wasn't rude at all, but I just thought it was funny.
I mean, I know, given everything that we talked about, but do you see, do you still see it running for? Do you still see it running and running, or do you think you'll step away?
I mean, it's totally up to them. I mean, it's such a, you know, it really is. It enables me to do things that a lot of people can't. It enables me to do independent things. So I hope that it keeps going, because it means that in those 6 months I can write and I can do other stuff. I was really lucky to do that, and to be able to do that with something that's actually good as well. Like, I think that's really, so I'm so lucky. And so, yeah, I do. I hope that happens in some way or another. I'm pretty tired, but...
But that, you know, that's a wonderful thing. There is this old adage of one for them, one for me. I'm not saying that Hannah is like a Fast Furious movie, but in terms of being able to free you up like that, I mean, that's that is a positive thing, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, it was such a pleasure to talk with you, and thank you. You know what? Thank you so much for genuinely, that was a real education. It was so lovely to listen to a voice of such authority, and for me to take on so much information there. And so, as I say, the next time I'm at that dinner party talking about films and TV, I will now have a fresh opinion. And I'm truly grateful for that.
Very sweet.
That was a real blast. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thanks a lot. Have a great day.
Bless you. Take care. Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you. Huge thanks to Esme. A wonderful chat. I think we are lucky on this podcast where people do open up and are honest and speak from the heart. But I mean, I've been interviewing people for 20 years, and there are times, not on the Balance podcast, I just want to make that absolutely clear. But there are times when people trot out, you know, the same stuff, or they phone it in a bit. You know, they don't really mean the answers that they're giving. And so to chat with someone who, I tell you what, turned up for the podcast to sit down for a proper chat was wonderful. And it was one of those chats that really stayed with me. And it was good to, you know... Crikey, I'm never too old to learn. That's one thing. That's one thing life teaches me on a daily basis. I feel like I learn from my two young girls, and yeah, to be educated like that was wonderful. And yeah, really took it all on board. Great, absolutely fantastic. Very, very likable. First thing I did after the chat was email the people who made it happen and to say, what an absolute legend. Brilliant. Hope to chat with her again. Thank you very much, Esme. I think you're fantastic. Hannah, seasons 1 and 2 available to watch, and if you're a Hannah fan, you will agree with me, I think, when I say I really hope that show just keeps on running. Lots of directions it can take. If you would like to drop me an email, podcast@balance.media, get in touch with our sales team, maybe you want a podcast ad, my dulcet tones, or or some less. sales@balance.media. Cheers, guys. Take care. Bye.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.